Welcome to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. It's great to be back in the studios live here at WCOM in Carrboro, North Carolina. Today's program was inspired by a conversation that I had with a gentleman who runs a program out of a local church called Divorce Care. Some of you folks, maybe listeners, may know very well about this program because of the Facebook updates that I gave you. But for those among us who don't have that access, I'd like to direct your attention to a website called www.divorcecare.org. All of us, at one point in our lives, have been in a tough position, and frequently, our friends or our family members present us with news that we're not sure how to handle. And one of the aspects of today's conversation with Mr. Ron Duke is going to be, how do we talk to our family and friends about this painful thing called divorce? And what have we learned over the years through his experience running this divorce care program? And Mr. Duke is going to speak to us today, and we're going to spend the whole hour together. The first half of our show, we're going to talk about Mr. Duke's experience, what led him to this line of work, this line of volunteer work. And then the second half of the show, we're going to talk more about the organization Divorce Care. The reason that we're presenting the show today is because Bill and I have had some news from our friends whom we were surprised to hear about an upcoming separation. And neither one of us in our conversation together truly knew how to comfort the couple. So we've asked, I thought about it, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to talk about what kind of courage we need to summon when comforting our friends and talking about divorce. But before anything, we need to increase our education. So I brought along an expert. Now, with that long-winded explanation, welcome to Courage Cocktail, Ron Duke.
Thank you, Leanne.
It's a pleasure you're here. Thank you. All right, Ron, you're going to help us. We've got to learn a little bit more about this national program called Divorce Care, who its members are, and how long it's been around.
Divorce Care actually started in 1993, so we're in our 20th year. A local business guy here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area went through a very painful divorce. And his church helped him a lot get through that season of his life. Sometime later, he remarried a lady who had a similar experience. And the gentleman's name is Steve Grissom. Steve and Cheryl founded Divorce Care in the Raleigh area, as I said, in 1993. And as they made this program available to other pastors, it sort of started to spread. And today I think we have about 18,000 churches around the world that are involved in divorce care. All the leaders are people like myself that are volunteers that have experienced this pain and sort of have a heart to help others that have been through it or are going through it at this time. But it's a video-based program that's a 13-week-long session, and each week, each of the 13 weeks, deals with a different topic. Some of the topics are sort of, I call them more practical, like financial survival. How does someone deal with what is almost certainly going to make a big difference in a negative way financially in their life? Many people, obviously, that go through separation and divorce are parents. So we have a week on kid care. What do you do to help your children through this? I guess to interject just a little bit of an opinion, I don't think children, generally speaking, I don't know how children can come through this and not be negatively impacted. Now, that doesn't mean they stay that way. I don't want to sound like a prophet of doom, but there's hope for children to recover just like for adults, but it's a very negative experience for most children.
Which actually, I've got to interject, that tells me, Leanne, listen closely, because we could preemptively learn from this and perhaps help the children of these parents who are no longer together.
Exactly. In fact, we'll get a little ahead of ourselves probably here, but there's another part of divorce care called Divorce Care for Kids that's a similar type video-based program that's for children, I think, from age 5 to 12. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a part of that because I deal only with the adults, but I'm familiar with the program. And it sort of got started because there were so many people like myself who saw the damage that this does to children. And we wanted to do something to help. So Divorce Care put their resources together with the experts around the country on what can we do to help children get through this. But back to the Divorce Care program, the 13 weeks, there's some weeks that deal with things like depression, anger, loneliness. Those are pretty universal emotions. Now, everyone may not be affected the same way. I now sort of jokingly say that I was the poster child for depression. Oh. I'm this type A business guy that acts like I've had too much caffeine most of the time. But when I went through this part of my life, it was the exact opposite. And I really struggled with that, and even to the point of needing medication and a lot of professional help for a couple of years. Other people have enormous anger issues with it. Thankfully, I was sort of spared from that, but I see it quite often. And I do think, Leanne, that loneliness is a universal emotion and challenge for everyone going through separation and divorce, because all of a sudden there was this partner in your life, and now that person's no longer here. So whether you chose to initiate the divorce or you were the one that did not want it to occur, you still deal with loneliness. And the biggie out of those 13 weeks, the week is that we spend on forgiveness, is by far the most important. Of course, Divorce Care is a Christian-based ministry, but even secular psychologists have been saying for several years that there's no way to recover from this kind of pain without being able to forgive. And that's the toughest thing for most people to do. So a lot of times it's the person you trusted the most has disappointed you the most, and it's hard to turn that loose. But I'm not a psychologist, but from all the professionals that tell us that you'll never heal completely without being able to forgive first.
Ron, I want to explain something to you about Courage Cocktail. We are in the forefront of the new champions of learning. And expertise can come from a university, it can come from degrees, it can come from a host of places. But radio, and Courage Cocktail especially, tries to seek out among our community those members who have expertise that's hard won through experience, and then also something that's sustainable. It's not just a one-shot deal. So you are welcome on this program. You say you're not a psychologist, but the wisdom that you had through walking the walk, and then most importantly, helping other people, is making this content very valuable. And I can't think of a more legitimate guest.
Well, your kind of experience is a great teacher.
All right. So now I understand there are 13 sessions or 13 weeks, and the forgiveness aspect seems to be the toughest. Is that saved for the very ending?
Actually, it's the 11th week, and each week it's pretty strategic how the program was designed to deal with certain issues at certain times throughout the 13 weeks. One question I oftentimes get is, so do I need to start into a divorce care group on week one? And I guess that's, ideal, but it's certainly not necessary. In fact, I'd say the majority of people in my 10 years with this ministry My experience has been most people do not start week one. You know, there'll be someone that'll hear us today on the radio and decide to look into it and find a group near them, and it's week five or week 10, and they can start at any time because each week is separate and deals with a different topic, as I said earlier, so you can start at any time. I'll add this, my personal experience for myself and then my personal observation has been that the people that seem to benefit the most from this ministry are those that go through the entire 13 weeks at least two times.
You're talking 26 weeks. Yeah. That's a half a year.
Yeah. Well, I jokingly say I would have snorted peanut butter for relief when I went through this because it was anything I could have done to have helped me with this pain, I would have tried. And along that line, one of the challenges is for people to commit to anything for 13 weeks. There's almost nothing that most people will commit to for that long. So I realize that's asking for a lot of people to do something that's beyond what they normally would do. But that second time through, everybody that's ever done it has told me that they learned more the second 13 weeks than they did the first one. They missed so much the first time. And a lot of that's tied to their healing. The more their heart is healed, the more that they can absorb a lot of this information and guidance.
Well, what stumps me here, and it doesn't stump me as a radio show host, it stumps me as a parent, as a mother, as a wife, is that this program is being brought to the community within the cradle of churches. So tell me, what's that association? Why does the church play such a central role in promoting this work?
Well, Steve and Cheryl Grissom that I mentioned earlier, who founded Divorce Care, and it's now a part of the organization called Church Initiatives, they decided they wanted to partner with churches to provide this kind of information, this type of ministry help to congregations. A couple of reasons that they've chosen to only affiliate with churches around the world is this is a Christian ministry, and they felt like that there needed to be a pastor that sort of would oversee what was being done here. And some churches choose to provide space in their own facility, and others will choose to meet in a more public place with the leaders providing this help in the community at a location other than the church. I'm sort of careful how I say this. I don't want to ever seem disrespectful of pastors. Some of my closest friends over my adult life have been my own personal pastors and some other ministers I've known. But I told one a while back that I knew more about how to fly the space shuttle backwards than he knew about divorce because he'd never been there. And an example that I give is, and it's sort of a sad example, but it's to make a point. If I knew someone who had lost a child to an accident or an illness, I would be sad to hear that. If it was someone close to me, I would be especially sad to hear that. But unless I've lost a child, I really don't know what they're going through. I haven't walked in their shoes. And so most pastors have never been through the experience of separation and divorce. And, you know, they can read a lot of books about it and go to a lot of seminary classes on it, but it's just not the same as experiencing it personally. So that's one of the advantages of Divorce Care and why it is so effective. It was designed by people who've been down this road. It's led by people such as myself who understand. And you constantly see people come into these groups and say, you know, finally somebody knows how I really feel.
Well, you have the moral authority, the legitimacy of saying, I've been there too. I moved beyond it. And this is the things that I've learned and mm-hmm. I'm still learning. From what I hear, you talk about the 10 years that you've been in this ministry. You keep on learning new stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, the material that started in started using in 1993, it was old VHS videos back then. And I don't know, some years ago, 7, 8, 9 years ago maybe, all that material was redone on a DVD and some changes made. And then just recently, within the past few months, well, we got Divorce Care 3.0 with brand new material. And in my opinion, it's improved significantly each time they've updated it.
Well, what I'd like to do is, in this section of the program, before we go to a little break, is to ask you, you are committed to divorce care. You've given 10 years of your own life, and I'm not sure how many hours per week that involves, but what led you here?
Well, again, I went through the most painful experience of my life when I went through a divorce in 2000, after just under 25 years of marriage. And about a year after the marriage ended, a friend of mine suggested that I get involved in a divorce care group, which I'd never heard of. And so shortly thereafter, I found a divorce care group, and I went to it. And of all the things that I tried, from professional counseling, from a very just an excellent Christian counselor, pastors, friends, just you name it. God used divorce care more than everything else put together, it seems, to bring healing and direction to my life. And again, I'd never heard of it, and I was just amazed at how it spoke to what I needed to hear. So after going through this program, I was sharing it with a pastor friend of mine, and he said, you know, you really need to start one of these groups.
And, oh, no.
We were at lunch, and I said, yeah, I knew you were going to say that, and I really don't want to do it. But I decided I would. I felt, you know, led, that's what I should do. And I even said, you know, I wish God would have called me to be a missionary in a jungle somewhere. That would have been easier than this stuff. But anyway, I started leading those groups, and it's just something I've been very passionate about. I'm certain there must be other places that people can get help. I've just personally am not aware of anything that does as much good for as many people with this issue of divorce as divorce care does. And so I just have never lost my my passion for trying to help people with, you know, in the scripture, the Apostle Paul wrote a couple of letters to the Corinthian church, and in 2 Corinthians, he says, God comforts us so that we can comfort others. Mm. And there's just a lot of my time I spend doing this, being reminded of that. I guess that's what drives me a lot.
You're a very humble man, Ron. When I listen to you speak about this, you have this way of being of that makes me wonder out loud if the knowledge that you have and this program, there's no doubt why it's 18,000 churches strong. I can't imagine how many members of people actually ran through the program, if you know.
I would have no way. I mean, I couldn't even tell you, Leanne, how many people have been through these groups that I've done over the years, ones I've led, but, you know, hundreds. Most groups are pretty small by design. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had groups with two people in it, and I've had them with 10 or 12, but really a dozen's more than you can almost manage. It's pretty interactive, group sharing. And there are those that are pretty extroverted like me that if there were 100 in there, they'd speak up. But most people with more than just a handful, they're pretty introverted and don't want to offer any of their comments or ask any questions. So, you know, a group of five or six, pretty normal size group.
Well, may I ask you, when you consider all the things that you've witnessed and you contribute and you I'm certain those programs, they ask for your feedback as a leader. What do you think? What's working? Where are the stumbling blocks? What, in your opinion, I know you mentioned the forgiveness class, but What do you think stands out in your mind as an extraordinary experience and one attendee had? Is there anything, any one story that sticks out that says, oh, I can't believe that happened?
You know, right off the top of my head, the first thing that comes to my mind wouldn't be an earth-shattering type of event for most people if they were watching it. But the one of the things that divorce care let me just say, this is one thing that divorce care is not. It is not a ministry that is promoting divorce. Some people actually think that that's what we're about, and it's absolutely not that. We're actually trying to help people through that pain, to bring healing, to draw them closer to God, to give them direction. And whenever possible, we encourage reconciliation. Now, I'll admit that that does not happen as often as we'd like because, you know, it takes two people to reconcile. And generally in a separation and a divorce, one of the spouses has determined that he or she's not interested in that. But my favorite stories that I can tell are those that when there have been spouses that reconciled. My favorite one's probably the couple that had been married 36 years, and she announced that she wanted a divorce. And he just retired, and they were looking to live at the beach and enjoy the fruits of their labor, and then he was hit with this. And so it was a crushing thing for him and their two daughters that were in their 30s, but she was able to get some counseling and deal with some issues that had plagued her since she was a child. And they reconciled a number of years ago now and are actively involved, actually, in the church that I attend now. And every time I see them, it warms my heart to see what God did there because, you know, they're the exception rather than the rule. But a family was restored and hearts were healed. And, you know, I just know that's really the design God would like.
Well, which reminds me, when I went out to the website, www.divorcecare.org,
right,
there's a column on the left-hand side, and it says something like this. I can't remember it right now, but it says, before you consider divorce, I think, something mm-hmm. like that, which reminds me of this story.
Yeah.
So you actually try to help people through their crises,
yeah,
so it doesn't end there.
Yeah, Lynn, you know, we live in a society that has accepted separation and divorce as the norm. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to bore you with statistics because, quite candidly, I don't know which ones are accurate. There's so many, but every statistic that you read about the divorce numbers in our country, somewhere give or take around half of marriages are going to end in divorce. And so you look at, I told a pastor friend of mine one day who has a very large congregation, I said, have everybody stand up and then tell the ones that have been divorced to have a seat. And then tell the ones whose mother, father, sister, or brother, they've had a divorce in their family, for them to have a seat. And then say, okay, think of the three closest people in your life. And of those three people, have any of them ever been divorced? You have a seat, and I can promise you my retirement fund, there won't be a person standing. And there won't be. And you can do that all over America.
That takes a great deal of courage there.
Well, those are just the numbers because we all know people that are that way.
Yeah.
And so what happens is we see people that have just accepted that once you get separated, you know, on Friday, the divorce must be going to happen by Sunday, and they need to have another boyfriend or girlfriend by Tuesday, and in about 30 days, let's remarry for the next one. And the sad statistics there are about 95% of people that get divorced remarry. So that's almost everybody. 79% of those will have a second divorce.
Oh, Ron.
Of those, 87% will have a third divorce, and of those, 94% will have a fourth divorce. So we're not doing something right.
I have to tell you, I did not know that. I didn't know those statistics. Yeah. What is that telling us? We're not doing something right.
And this is true among Christian churches, mm-hmm. and it's true among the unchurched that have no interest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's everywhere. And it's become so prevalent and so accepted. I sort of get on my soapbox with this, Leanne, because if it were any other issue, we'd want the government involved to fix it. You know, the amount of poverty it causes, especially among women, the educational issues, the abuse, drug abuse issues, alcohol abuse issues, crime issues that the children of divorce seem to always lead in. It's a cancer in our society, and we just have sort of accepted it. So that's one of the reasons we promote reconciliation is when both the husband and the wife can be healed and then that relationship can be healed, it prevents a lot of other pain.
We try and encourage Cocktail to find new medicine for vexing problems. And I use that tagline, and I always say it laughingly, I always say it with a smile. But the fact of the matter is that this program's been in business since 1993. Mm-hmm. It's growing strong. Mm-hmm. Evidently, there must be measurements to know that, yes, are people, is there any kind of feedback of the people who progress through this program? Are they any different at the end of the program than those who may not have had this benefit?
I can't answer that from any type of scientific survey. I can only offer my personal observation. And, you know, I've done this work now for, I say, again, about 10 years in the same city. So I run into a lot of people over the years that have been through it. And it absolutely has helped a lot of the people that I have seen come through it, the ones that will stay with it. Now, you know, one of the challenges, and I'll encourage our listeners, back to committing to 13 or 26 weeks, that seems to be difficult for some people. So you go 2 or 3 weeks or 6 weeks and then quit, and you're probably not going to benefit a whole lot from it. So I can't give you, again, a scientific survey that says this is the percentage of people that'll get what they need from it. But
sure. I can imagine the children of those parents who over time either sought reconciliation or who made different, maybe stronger decisions would look to this organization as a life-saving machine, life-saving.
Exactly. You know, for me, after I'd been separated for a year, in our state here, you must be separated legally for 1 year before a divorce can be granted. So the year had gone by, and I was assuming that the divorce would occur any time, which it did pretty shortly thereafter. So I was thinking, well, what do I do from here? I mean, I'm 45 years old, and I'm starting my life over, and I don't even know where to start. But I thought, well, I guess I should start dating. I mean, that's what everybody's been telling me. You know, everybody knows somebody they want you to take to dinner. And I'd heard that countless times. So I thought, well, maybe that should be what I should do. And fortunately, that was about the time I started into a divorce care group, and we strongly encourage that people don't start dating again, and with the hopes of remarrying especially, until the healing and the direction that they need they found. So I have to think that it prevented a train wreck in my life, because I would have undoubtedly started dating and probably remarried again way too soon, and so much baggage that I had not dealt with. And so we encourage people to wait on that. And I feel like that's where we probably lose a few people in our groups, because they're lonely. All their friends and coworkers and neighbors are trying to line them up with someone. So they sort of lose interest in us when they find interest in somebody else sometimes, I'm afraid.
Well, all right. This is a perfect segue. When we come back, what I need you to help me with is teaching us what do we say, how do we behave, how do we engage in deeper dialogue with our spouses, or more importantly, in this situation, with friends who are going through this painful process. Stay tuned for Courage Cocktail.
Carborough Board of Aldermen has scheduled a public hearing for Shelton Station tomorrow, Thursday, March 21st at 7:30 p.m. at the Carborough Town Hall. For more information, contact Kathy Wilson, 919-918-7309, or go to their website, www.townofcarborough.org. Again, contact Kathy Wilson at 919-918-7309, or go to their website, www.townofcarborough.org.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. You are joining us this Wednesday afternoon at WCOM LPFM in Carborough, North Carolina. This has been a wonderful program for Bill and myself for listening to our guest, who is Mr. Ron Duke. We are learning more about a program that's in our community, and as I've learned this morning, across the world. It's called Divorce Care, www.divorcecare.org. Mr. Ron Duke has been a volunteer in a program that's run out of his church here at Greystone Baptist Church in Durham, North Carolina, and where he works as a volunteer who promotes this program and help people who are going through the painful situation of separation and divorce through a support group that's developed in 13-week segments, and he's recommending to our listeners and to people who go through this program that many of them who successfully do this take the program twice. So joining us is Ron Duke. I welcome you back to the show, Ron.
Thank you
for sharing this insight. Now, Ron, I've queued it up. I need help. What do we tell our friends who are going through this painful separation?
Leon, first of all, we do a really good job in our society with helping people grieve a loss like death. We have a memorial or funeral service. We, in many cases, view a body. We bury that person. And we move past it, and everybody that's close to the survivors, the spouse, the children, whatever, understand what a loss they've had. And we're pretty tenderhearted toward them for some time, probably not nearly as long as we should, but we at least acknowledge what a significant loss this has been. There are painful things in life that I don't know how you measure the degree of pain. I mean, they're all off the chart. But the so-called experts, and I'm not one, I'm a layperson, but the people that study this stuff tell us that divorce is the most intense emotional pain a person can go through in all of their life, worse than death.
So
what happens is we've sort of gotten numb to it. We all know a long list of people, probably close to a list of people that may be long, that have been through separation and divorce. If you live long as I have, in 57 years, I've seen it a lot of times. So we can get kind of calloused to separation and divorce. We see it on, the magazine racks at the grocery stores and on TV with in the entertainment industry. It's like relationships are disposable. So all of a sudden, when it happens to a neighbor or a friend or a coworker or even a family member, it's like, people get divorced all the time. You'll get over it. Get on with your life.
You're right. This idea that's like a bad cold,
right.
It's something, there's a beginning, middle,
exactly,
and end, and there's no sequelae, consequences.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if we don't want to get too close and personal.
Right. And then sometimes I think, and this is my opinion, I don't know that this is accurate or not, but I think that, like in my situation, there were some wonderful people that I knew and some fairly close to me. They couldn't really even hear me talk about it but a few minutes before they had to change the subject or go on their way. Because it was so difficult for them to see this occur. And I think some of them actually have told me later, they said, this made me wonder if it could happen to me. And I said, let me go on and tell you, it can absolutely happen to you because it can happen to anybody.
Sure.
Nobody's immune. But back to trying to be a friend, to comfort, to minister to people that we know, I think we first of all just have to understand the significance of this loss and how long it's going to take this person to get over it. In divorce care, we tell people there's two ways to get through this. One's with extreme pain and one's with excruciating pain, but there's no pain-free way to do it. And before I talk much more about how to deal with, family and friends, understand that one of the biggest mistakes that separated and divorced people make is that they think they're going to get over this really, really quickly because they want to. They want this gone as fast as possible. And it can take years. In fact, some would say it takes 1 year of healing for every 4 years you were married. So a 20-year marriage, which is, in my experience, I've seen a lot of those 20- and 30-year marriages dissolve. You're talking 5 or more years for people to really fully recover. And I know that was pretty much the case for me. It took about 5 years. So this thought of, the marriage has ended and I've been separated for a month, so I guess I need to start dating somebody. I'll get over it. It's just not going to happen. So, but how do you help those people? As back to your question. Again, first of all, understand how significant this loss is. Then you probably, if you've never been there, you probably are not going to have a clue as to what to say. But what you can do that is just maybe the most important thing you can do is listen. If they have a person, and it may be you, that they can listen, that will listen to them, perhaps over and over and over, say the same thing for a year or two. Mm-hmm. If they can just get that off of their chest, I don't think you can measure the impact. My very closest friend, who does what I do for a living, has no professional training in counseling or ministry. I don't think God used any one person as much as he used him, because he would listen to me over and over again. And I've told him this. In fact, even referencing this situation now, I can almost get a little choked up thinking about how much he helped me. And he says the easiest thing he's ever done in his life. But some people can listen. And I know some other people that are just, I can't tell you enough good about them, but they couldn't listen to me for 2 minutes and they had to get away from it. They couldn't take it. So if you have that gift of being able to listen to someone kind of pour out their heart, you don't have to really say anything. But that's probably the most important thing that you can do. Another thing, Leanne, is, you know, if you and Bill had a friend dealing with this, especially if they're reasonably close by, you know, call them on a Saturday morning and say, "What you doing for dinner tonight?"
Oh, come that's over a and great idea.
Come on and let's put a burger on the grill. Because everybody else is with who they want to be with on Saturday night.
I never considered that.
Call them throughout the week and see how you're doing. I mean, it'll take a little bit of your effort and time to meet them for a cup of coffee or have lunch with them. Or just call them on the phone and listen again for an hour if it takes it. But the lonely factor is off the chart with most people with divorce and separation. So if you can offer yourself to do some of this, you cannot imagine how helpful it is.
Which brings me to this question of how do we reconcile the fear? And this is, remember, our book, Friendly Fear Notebook, brought us to Courage Cocktail. But golly, there's a lot of fear when we confront our friends who are going through something painful. And we can say to ourselves things like this, "Wow, that could be me." And not in an empathetic way, not in like, "Oh, I better help you out because this could be me," but more like a frightening way. And that makes one want to avoid the situation. So this is a human thing. It's a human failing. I could see why and how these dots get connected, but we've got to override those dots. We've got to find the courage to help and listen.
You're so right. It's there's a tendency for us, if we don't know what to do or say, is just not to do anything at all, which is probably the worst possible thing. Worst choice we could make. One of my closest friends, a professor of pastoral counseling and a psychologist, and he says that there is a ministry in our presence. In other words, just being present with people when they're walking through a dark valley. It's not about really saying anything sometimes or even doing anything, but just our presence shows another person how much we really care about them. And back to my best friend, that's what he did. He was just present there a lot of times and gave no apparent effort to try to fix me.
He gave up on fixing you, huh? Yeah. Like a true friend would.
Well, most of my friends are that way.
Me too. I'm glad we connected on that. Well, I have this experience that we've had in Raleigh, but we come from Manhattan, and so society moves very fast everywhere. But Bill taught me, my own Bill taught me something remarkable that at first I just didn't want to swallow it. But he was right. There's a temptation for couples who have made friends with other couples who are going through a divorce to choose sides. Golly, it's so easy to say, "Oh, I think she's right. I think he's right." Tell us why this doesn't work.
You've probably asked a $64 question. I don't know all the whys on that, but it is very natural. Uh-huh. You know, there's a seemed like an endless number of scenarios as to why people separate and divorce. But that is very common. I'm probably sound like I'm avoiding your question by this answer, but I'm really not. With any loss in life, one of the ways that God designed us to get over that loss and to heal from it is to grieve. We have to grieve losses. Again, we do that normally with death fairly well. But, you know, you can lose a career that you've had for 20 or 30 years that you've been passionate about. I've seen that happen a few times. And that's a significant loss. And we grieve losses that are that mean something to us. So, with divorce, it's no different. And we've got to give people a way of grieving those losses. Your question was, how do we not choose sides, or why do we choose sides?
Or how do we see our friends choosing sides? You know, there's the dynamic is that, yeah. Oh, he was wrong, she was wrong, yeah. And all this stuff. Yeah. And Bill and I have tried very hard to say, you know, stop. This right. is madness. We yeah. cannot assign blame. We cannot choose sides.
Exactly.
And I credit my own Bill with helping me see this and acting on it.
I don't
But
think,
it's hard.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think there's a situation where a separation and a divorce occurred that one person was 100% at fault. And I'm talking about my own. I did not choose to end a marriage, but I do accept a lot of blame for a lot of mistakes. A lot of it was just naive, but regardless, it was still mistakes. And so someone could easily throw rocks at my former wife as though she had done something really wrong and not see a lot of the wrong that I did. So I think that's pretty true everywhere.
So what you're saying to us is steer clear of making any choices. Steer clear of
I'm not sure what good it really does, Leanne.
Yeah.
You know, passing all the judgment and getting all these opinions out there, I don't know what's positive about that. Mm-hmm. What I do know is that when you reach out to these people to be their friend, to help them, to support them, to maybe not approve of what they've done sometimes, but it's pretty biblical that I don't need to pass a lot of judgment on someone else with that speck in their eye when I've got that plank in my eye.
So I completely understand that, and words spoken as a true expert. When you look out and see the children of divorce and see your divorce care and the fact that they created a program that supports kids through this process, is there any way that onlookers can help those kids? Can you help like a grandparent involved in this? Is there certain ways of being?
Yeah. A dozen years after I walked through this difficult time, I'm really grateful for the healing that God's given me. I think I'm as over it as you can get. But I have a real tender heart for the children of divorce, whether they're small or 30-year-old children, because I don't believe there's a situation where they're not negatively impacted. And what you just alluded to, you know, if it's a grandparent, if it's a neighbor, to have a positive impact on that child's life, you know, I think one of the biggest lies that comes straight out of the pit of hell is children are resilient, they'll bounce back. As you said earlier, a bad cold. It's not that way. This is a very serious issue and very sobering, and it's extremely sad to me to see how children are negatively impacted by this. But that's a topic for a whole nother day, and I'll be candid with you. I've got a real bleeding heart toward those children. But I don't have nearly as many of the answers for that as I do on how to deal with the parents.
Well, I appreciate that honesty. And I think what we're doing is raising the specter that when this divorce care product, these programs are out there, we need to encourage people to walk through the door, but we need to be able to help them stay in their programs for as many weeks as it takes.
Exactly. You know, it's just old-time accountability, I guess you call it. But if you've got a friend, a family member that needs this kind of help, just continue to encourage them. Try not to, I'd say, let or accept their excuses for not being there. You know, I had a person recently say, well, you know, the night you do these groups, I'm involved at something at my church that I'd hate to miss. Now, right or wrong, my comment was, there's nothing going on at your church that is nearly as important for you as this is. You know, the healing that you need and the direction that you need God to give you is more important for this season of your life than anything else that's going on. So, you know, whether it's, you know, I'm in a golf league on that night or whatever, I just can't picture what's more important than being able to heal from this traumatic experience in your life and making the right decisions going forward.
Which is really a great place to wrap up this conversation. And that is, you nailed it again, Ron. You just got this. Making decisions at times of crises. Similar to health crises, oftentimes when somebody's announced or told bad news, our family told bad news, you know, stage four cancer. Okay, what do we do? Not only do you have to absorb the emotional impact of that bad news, but then you got to go ahead and make a lot of decisions. So when you see the marriage between crisis, chaos, and decision-making, I can't imagine a more dangerous cocktail.
Well, let me add this real quickly. I know our time's about up, but we teach people that there's of their energy or their total amount of energy that on a normal person that's functioning normally, about 25% of your energy is directed to the emotional part of your life, 25 to the spiritual, 25 to the physical, 25 to the mental. When a person goes through a separation and a divorce, as much as 85% of your energy is channeled toward the emotional side of your life. That's why it leaves you physically exhausted. People wake up in the morning tired. It leaves you mentally challenged. I remember waking up in the morning and staring at my coffee pot and trying to remember, how do you make coffee? And I've done it for years. I remember people saying, you remember last year when we were at such and such of an event? In fact, the vice president of my company said that to me, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't remember being there. And I'm thinking, this is the VP that I report to. I didn't remember a thing about it a year earlier. So when all of your energy, just about 85% of, or as much as that is channeled toward the emotional part of your life, you're having trouble making good decisions. That's why we tell someone who's just maybe buried a spouse, you probably don't need to make any really big decisions for a year or so, because all of your energy is channeled toward the emotional. So anyway, I know our time's up, but it's this will help people make a lot of the wise decisions.
The wise decisions. And Ron, I'm so grateful to the work you're doing, for visiting us, and for speaking to us in an inspired, compassionate way. You have a remarkable voice, and it's just a level of calm that's in the air here that I very rarely get to witness.
Well, I've been honored to be with you. It's been my pleasure, and I pray God will use this to help a lot of people.
Well, and I'm sure that he will. I want to listeners, I'm so grateful that you tuned in today. We will go ahead and post this podcast up on our social media on the website www.friendlyfearnotebook.com. But the most important message today is, if you can help somebody, point them in the direction of this wonderful program. Their website is www.divorcecare.org. And there are people, I believe 18,000 churches along the way, all over the world, with men and women who may not be quite as inspired as Ron Duke, but certainly of that league. and I hope you've enjoyed today's program. Stay in touch. Stay listening to us. We will return next week. I will bring the lunch. You bring the courage cocktail. Thanks for joining us.